welcome to the Mad Trio Podcast. This week we have the California Pariah, Jonathan Charney, James, the Fat Man, Stevens, and Ryan something, Preston.
I'm not important enough for a title.
I think he's not important enough for a
Really for any time. You know what I mean? I'm fine with it. I even get the 30-second thought prior to going on air. You know?
I've been trying to find a nickname for you, but nothing just quite sticks.
Like the black glove.
Yeah, and so I know your issue with that. So I've been trying to find something that particularly fits your very unique proclivities.
Well, he just kind of likes to pretend like he's grown out of the black glove, but you know, I mean, if the how's the saying go? If the glove fits, you must wear it.
That's not exactly what Johnny Cochran said, but that's close enough.
Okay, so, you know, today at work, like, I kind of got sick of just the normal radio that we've been having on. We listen to Pandora a lot at work. And so I just kind of got a wild hair and I put on 50s rock. And, you know, so the person I work with, she started coming back with, like, so what does this song make you think of? You know, it's like Stand By Me. And I'm like, well, it makes me think of River Phoenix. And she's like, oh, I'm talking about the movie with the kids on the railroad tracks. I'm like, okay, that's Stand By Me with River Phoenix. That's the same movie. But we're going through and, you know, My Girl's on and that one, which makes me think of Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag. But But I was sitting there and listening to all these, and it's taking me back, you know, the lion, you know, in the jungle, you know, the lion sleeps tonight, which brings us to Sandlot. And I was really thinking about it. I'm like, you know what? They don't make good children's movies anymore. Think about it. When was the last time that a good children's movie for, you know, between 6 to 12, maybe 14 age.
So
that's come out that isn't a remake of a Disney.
So my only thought, so I actually think
I was thinking of probably Super 8 as well, but
I think that
you mean okay, like a Goonies style movie or like animation? Okay,
like a Goonies. See,
you're right. Super 8 I was really hoping was going to catch on with the youth, but apparently it didn't. I wasn't a kid when I saw the movie, so.
Yeah. So I think that's, I actually think that's the key, is the fact when Goonies came out, when Stand By Me came out, the issue,
My Girl.
The issue is the fact that we were.
The Good Son.
We were young. I fucking hate that movie. I hated it then. I think that's the issue, is we're not young enough to really get what would really be that type of movie. I mean, for us, we're catching.
But we also had Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but
we had.
But here's the thing: we're catching nostalgia. When you're looking for another Goonies that gives you that feeling, you're trying to catch the nostalgia because Goonies does not really hold up that well to me at this point in my life. Maybe when my son's old enough. However, far as animated movies, there's a ton when I was a kid that I loved that to me hold up that. Overall, they're not great. Some of them are Rankin and Bass, and if any of you hate Rankin and Bass, you can literally just fuck off.
I'm fucking one of them. Fuck yourself, those movies suck.
You don't like Rankin and Bass?
No. We talked about this.
Oh man, no. I hate fucking rotoscope so much.
They're not all rotoscope, just some of them.
Quite a few are also stop motion.
For the record, The Hobbit from 76, the cartoon rotoscope one, I fucking dug the shit out of that movie.
Yeah.
So the Hobbit,
about the actual
the Hobbit wasn't
art style.
The Hobbit wasn't rotoscoped. That was traditional animation. What was rotoscoped was the Lord of the Rings.
Okay, so maybe that was the difference. But it was still Rankin and Bass, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Cuz the Hobbit one.
Sorry,
guys. Oh, sorry. I was gonna say because the Hobbit one had an amazing soundtrack, had a very specific 70s style, and when you got to the Lord of the Rings, it got more like if I was on acid, this would have been an amazing movie.
I watched that on acid, and it wasn't.
Did it give you nightmares?
No, it just bored the shit out of me. Because I was thinking it'd be fantastic on acid, but no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think with kids, it's really about what you're able to relate to. You know what I mean? Like, but like by the time we started seeing like the Drake and Josh types of fucking Disney game, stupid. You know, just it didn't strike us as anything because when we were kids, we had dirty baseball fields and train tracks. You know, now they have.
Hello, Ryan?
With social media, and that's what they're going to relate to. And we're going to look at that as like fucking kids.
Hold
on. Sorry. I was going to say, I want to highlight what Ryan said real quick because I think he's right. I think we have more in relations to children in the 50s than people who are born after us have in relationship to us.
I can see that.
But yeah, we related more to fucking Stand By Me that took place back in the 50s, I think, right?
Yeah.
50s,
yeah.
60s. You know, than we do to like I said, Drake and Josh or something like that.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to point out is that I don't see any movies coming out that are live action outside of Disney films because they're turning Lion King, Aladdin, all that shit into Jungle Book into live action when that was cartoon
for
us.
But hold on. That are hitting the theater specifically?
Yes. Where are all those movies that are like that?
I have an idea. I legitimately think I think we're in an era where we're in a glut for movies. And what I mean by that is not movies in general, because there's a lot of people releasing movies, say Shunk Films and other people who are releasing low budget movies that look amazing or have great stories, but big box office movies like Stand By Me and other movies, I don't think they're making as much because it's not a guarantee. If you take a look at the type of movies, up until recently, it didn't seem like there were any variety. There were 1,000 different variants of Marvel type of stuff or these repop rehash movies, which there have always been. Even in our childhood, there were a lot of rehash. But I think what it is that the Disney has bought in so much of the market that I really do think there's a lack of quality variant content. And especially now when you've got Amazon, you've got Apple.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
there's so many different ways for the parents to get these, you know, sort of teen tween movies out there, you know, that are not the I'm got to take my kid to the theater and whatnot. I think there's a sweet spot for what parents want to see with their kids, and that's like the Disney Pixar stuff, you know, or even the DreamWorks Storks and the Abominable Snowman movies and those sorts of things. Parents are fine with seeing those. But when it gets into the tweens and the Goonies age, it's like, I don't want to watch dumb kids ride around on fucking Schwinn.
See, and this is the other thing I think it is, and this really breaks my heart, and it will always do it, is I think at least for most of America, we're going to start seeing movie theaters go out of business. Here's the reason I think that. It's really dependent on how Apple and a couple others, these people who are spending quite a lot of money. I mean, Netflix is spending a lot of money. Take a look what Apple's spending. Take a look what Amazon's spending. And none of them are going to theaters. And all these people who do like all these big award shows have actually saying now that, okay, if you're Netflix, if you're an Apple and you're an Amazon, if they're not actually in the theaters, you don't get to be a part of our award shows. So I think what's going to happen is it's going to be a more... like the big movies, the Marvels, the this, the that, that's going to be where you see the movies in the theater. And that breaks my heart because the communal experience, and this is something Ryan and I agree on, the communal experience of the theater is something I miss to this day. And there's just not a lot of movies that I'm willing to spend money on.
Well, that's the thing. It's like for my son, he's at that age where I would want him to watch a Sandlot movie or, you know, not so much Goonies because that's something I don't think he would really enjoy at this age. He might because it's got pirates and things like that in there mixed in. But I'm talking to him about movies and you know what he wants to watch? He wants to watch the new Marvel or the Spider-Man. And I mean, it's not something that is going to be like that with the Sandlot or Stand By Me or Goonies where, you know, it's more adventure with your friends. And that's kind of what you know, that to me was like the fun part of those movies is, you know, it, it was exactly. that. So, and you guys are totally right.
That's
with
why
the,
I was really hoping for fucking Super 8, man.
No, I see.
I was thinking like, oh, please let kids like this.
I remember when we watched that for Real Flix Reviews.
I was hoping.
And you and James said that. And I knew it as soon as I watched it. It's like, oh, this just doesn't have.
And it didn't.
This just doesn't. This is missing something. And I don't know if this is true about kids, but one of the reasons about Sandlot and about Goonies and some of these other movies is, I think I was 12, 13 when Sandlot came out in 93. Is the fact there's a sense of adventure that I had that you have as a child that you want to experience different things and you have like Goonies when they're doing things that they're not supposed to do and it's a shared communal experience and you get to hang on to that, to tag along with them. I don't know how much children have that now because now when I was a kid, video games was fucking like Mario Brothers and you didn't have that. Nowadays you play video games and you have that communal experience. You get to have an interactive communal experience versus what Goonies was. Is Goonies is you're along for the ride. It's not interactive, but it's a story you relate to because you want that adventure. And I just don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe kids nowadays, because all the available media, maybe now that's not going to happen. I mean, they're going to make them, but I just don't know if it's going to be as much because the 80s, that was all over the place.
Well, I think the issue is, and you brought it up, that, you know, Ryan and I were both were hoping that Super 8 was going to be that. And yeah. I don't think, now, I meant to check and see what our ratings were back then on that, but I don't think they necessarily failed with Super 8. But I think the market they went for was wrong. And possibly the timing of the movie was wrong. Because it was 2011 is when the movie came out. And the market that actually wanted it to be good was our age. And to us, it didn't relate to us. Even though it was more, I guess I would say the quality and everything of what they were, you know, the era that they were moving things around with was kind of more our era, but I think they missed the mark on it. And
I don't think you're going to be seeing a lot of.
And I think since it was a flop, because I consider that one a flop, I mean, no matter how we look at it, I don't think they made the money back they needed to. I don't think they're really going to try it much again, which is sad. Because I think if they
and
really
that was J.J. Abrams, you know, that was going to be the guy they give that shot to. You know?
Yeah, and to me, and I think I even said it then, is it was a disappointment because I had hopes for it, and it just wasn't there. It just wasn't there, and I think Ryan's on to something with and this brings me up to a question that I'll pose to both you guys and see what you guys think. I think that they do need to have more of something that hits the social media, the digital age that we're in, because that's what our kids are growing up and relating to, rather than being out there and, you know, as Ryan said, with the Schwinn out there, you know, being kids wandering a railroad track, you know, playing outside where you don't have some type of media device on you at all times. So I don't think that type of thing is going to play, but I think having something more along those lines, and this is what I'm opposed to you guys, would more of a Tron type of story,
I think,
be able to grasp that younger generation that we have.
I think that'd be the only way to do it, to do Tron or Grimgar Fantasy of Ash anime or Sword Art Online or Hack.Slash. I think that would be the only way to do it because nowadays kids just don't, like, how do you tell a film that's solely based on children nowadays? Now, granted, none of us are kids, and two out of the three of us have kids. And so for James and I, it's a learning experience as far as the way things are going to go. But I just don't think, I just don't know how you're going to tell that. I think the Tron story, I think that's closer to what you're going to have to do. Like the are any of you guys familiar with like with Grimgar, Fantasy of Ash, Sword Art Online, etc.?
Yeah.
Because I think that would be the only way to do it. I think the only issue you're going to have with that is the medium to how do you transpose realms. This fancy laser thing took him into the universe.
Which at the time was amazing.
Oh, no. Yeah. And in Sword Art Online, there was this nerve gear, and it somehow wouldn't let you, like, it would somehow was attached to your mind and yada yada, some sort of technology. Yeah. And same thing with Sword with hack.slash. So I don't know how. I think that's going to be the only barrier to entry on that is how do you get there? Now, you could probably do is maybe like the Silver Chair movies.
Oh, okay. The Chronicles of Narnia.
Chronicles of Narnia. I think you could do that in a fantasy realm. I still think something like Legend, you know, or that esque would work when you have something that's completely different than their reality that kind of tags all those kind of things that they you know.
Well, let's bring it back to the Chronicles of Narnia for a second. Hold on.
Well, I did want to say the reason why I think that is possible, because I still think everybody has a desire for adventure. I think it's inbred in children, but how you show it, I think, is not as easy as it used to be.
Okay, so let's bring up something like Chronicles of Narnia. Now, at the time that they brought up Chronicles of Narnia, and I'm not talking about the Disney, I'm talking about the BBC. Because the BBC did they did the entire series.
Live action or cartoon?
Live action back in the early 90s, I believe it was. Late 80s, early 90s. Anyways, they did it and I enjoyed it. But the thing is, I was really reading those types of books. And to watch media coming out with it, it was published through PBS. If you're looking. Anyways, so the thing is that we were reading those books. Now we have kids out there who I encourage my son to read. I do read with him. But, you know, like, how many out there do you really think are reading books of that caliber to their child? Now, I'm not reading it to him yet, but I probably will get into those books. I own all of them.
See,
but, you know, like,
reading is a good question, because at the moment, I've always been really picky in reading, and I just have never had enough time to actually sit down. Now, I love, and I'm such an auditory learner, I love audiobooks, so, but I think the barrier to entry is not as hard as you think. Because
as a society.
Yeah, well, with audiobooks, you know, parents being able to hand back their Kindle or their notebook to somebody with their you know, accounts on there. Oh, here, scan through, and there's a bunch of kids' books, and shit, comic books are on laptops and notebooks these days. So
that's how I was reading Walking
Dead.
The
barrier to the entry going to the library and whatnot, although that's kind of what we're railing against here, is that the kids don't, you know, get out of their house as much as, you know,
I think.
Although we hate being that these kids these days, these bad guys.
Get off my lawn. I do wonder.
Yeah.
I do wonder how much of a visual. How visual kids are today. And I'll do a Facebook thing on my personal Facebook account. Cause I'm curious, because one of the reasons, like, for example, take Lord of the Rings. It's the most obvious one I could actually tell you and make sense, or the Count of Monte Cristo.
Damn good.
When you read Lord of the Rings, it has so much more nobility to it. If it makes sense, there's a lot more in the book, in my opinion, that's not written. It's just the way the words fit the page, the paragraphs, the spacing, the timing, is there's so much more to it. And you're using your imagination. If you want to talk about the Count of Monte Cristo, there's whole sections of the book that, unless you're watching an old black and white movie, you'll never see. The Count of Monte Cristo, if y'all out don't know, there is one character that Edmond Dantès made. He made Sinbad the Sailor. There was a British guy, and there was Abbé Busante. And if you look at it, in my opinion, it's like each is like a personality. And so, and the way that book is written is absolutely gorgeous. Or even Three Musketeers. The way you read
that's
things.
The thing about the literary versions also is you get those turns of a literary, like, you know, we're all used to a twist in a movie and how that's set up and how that pays off. But in a book, it's entirely different because, like you were saying with Count of Monte Cristo specifically, they really slow play, you know, who the guy is, who this Abbé Zanzone is, who Sinbad the Sailor is, you know, who the Count is. And, you know, you have your little suspicions based on certain things, but not the, oh, that fucking guy looks like Jim Caviezel.
Yeah. Hey, wasn't that Jesus? That's the only thing. I mean, because I'm a huge, I love fantasy, always have, you know, especially like any fantasy movie. Like, I love the movie Legend, haven't watched in years. And that's one of the reasons I love anime. One of my favorite anime of all time is very, and a hardcore fantasy called Record of Lodoss War. I do wonder what if the kids are able to get from the medium they're watching, if they're able to get that desire to not only watch it, but get the wanderlust from it. Now, I think something like anime.
Well, I do. I think the three of us are proof positive that movies and TV have always been my preferred medium.
Yeah,
you know, I love books. I love stories in general, but I like the way a story is told in a movie sort of standard three-act structure, and I like when people mess around with that three-act structure and what I'm used to with movies, what I can see visually, what I can infer visually from a scene in a movie or show. I mean, a picture is worth 1,000 words, right? You know, same reason I like comic books. I can infer a lot of the emotion of what's going on without it being sort of spelled out through a narrative.
See,
just like a quick look to a character and you're like, oh, I get what's going on.
I love, excuse me for coughing again. I just love a good story. Like I love plays. I love audiobooks, books, doesn't matter. The Nutcracker and the ballet, and I love the medium of stories. It doesn't really matter if it's visual or not. I think the only difference is the story good, and is the way they're telling that story able to come across well. Now, for me, the Record of the Lodoss War and some of these other ones do, because it gives me one of the things that, and it was ingrained in me a child, is to have an adventure, to have a band of brothers. And you see these group of people band together against a common foe, which is very traditional story. So I think it really depends on how the story. Now, good stories, good fantasy, by the way, and personally, it's a bit of a sidebar. I think there's two types of fantasy, horrible or good. I've very few fantasy movies and even sci-fi movies have I seen that ever sit on the fence.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, not a lot of mediocre fantasy out there.
I disagree with you, John.
Okay, name a mediocre fantasy.
You have a ton of it.
Like what?
All in your DVD collection.
Like what?
The Punisher. Dolph Lundgren.
Punisher, that's not fantasy.
Yeah, okay.
That's a fantasy. You want to go out and kill everybody?
That's more of an action movie. Yeah. I'm talking about swords and sorcerers type of fantasy.
No, good fantasy.
A fucking fantasy movie.
No. Yeah, even there. But I was going to say Falling Down. Same thing as Punisher, but it's a good fantasy.
You're pushing, in my opinion, what the traditions of fantasy is. Now, I think what we need to do is go back to, and so what is fantasy?
Hi, John. My name is James Stevens.
Yes,
nice
I know.
To meet you.
I know, pedantic fucking bastard. But I don't see, the issue is, you know, especially because of Narnia, that's not the tradition of that fantasy, which is what I'm basing that off of.
But there's a lot of people that have fantasies about it. Didn't you watch Office Space?
Yeah, but I still wouldn't call that fantasy, though.
That's a whole fantasy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. If you're going to talk about literary fantasy, that's not it to me.
Now, anyways, but no, I
feel like I could literally make the fantasy argument for any movie I've ever seen. Now.
Damn right.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. Anyways, now what I'm going to bring it back to is, no, I agree with you. In the sense that, you know, like I looked it up, I know John looked it up, but he didn't bring it in. It's for anybody out there that's wondering what the hell I was talking about the BBC's version of the Chronicles of Narnia. It was released November 1988 and went to December 1990. Now, that was not the best production of Narnia. That's why I was so excited when Disney picked it up and started to remake it. because I wanted to see more of the creatures and everything that were in the stories that
they Disney-fied it.
They Disney-fied it, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, let me tell you, dude, that original 90s, it was a TV version, right? Like
yes.
A miniseries kind of
It was a miniseries, yeah, released by the BBC.
So it was, hold on.
That one soured me so bad on Chronicles of Narnia.
Right?
My mom was so fucking excited to show me Chronicles of Narnia that it was coming on TV, and she knew I wasn't going to read it. And then we're watching it, and I'm like, this is bullshit, Ma. She's like, no, you don't understand. It's way better than this.
So here, a little bit of information. It's apparently it's three series. It's a total of 18 episodes. They're roughly 25 to 30 minutes. It's a BBC production. And when we saw it, it was on your local PBS station.
Yes. So what I was going to say is, see, I read the books first. So when I saw the...
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, believe it or not, this jackass can read.
Read quite a bit. I've seen a shit ton more movies and television than I've ever read, but
I have
read a lot.
He wasn't allowed back in the library.
Now, the thing is, you know what? If they didn't want that to happen, they shouldn't have put those anatomy books in there, okay?
Well, hey.
Just saying. Anyways.
The poor little girl.
Anyways, that was totally creepy.
You're welcome.
Well, I took it down that road. Anyways, but now, so when I watched the BBC, I understood what they were going for. I wasn't quite like Ryan where he went into it cold and it's like watching X, the animated movie.
But BBC was known. But BBC was known for I always called it the BBC cheese. It was it's a romantic part. That's one of the reasons I like some of the older BBC stuff.
But you know, for me, that was, you know, it was exciting to see a live action version of it. Now, when Disney came out with it, I'm like, oh yes, they're actually gonna do a really good version of it. Now, the first two movies they put out, they did a really good version of it. And then the third one wasn't that great, but I understood where they were going with it, and then they just stopped. I'm still pissed off about that. Now, but that's what I would like to see. Now, the Lord of the Rings. Now, as I've said time and time again, it's hard to compete with a 12-year-old's imagination. That's how old I was when I started reading those books. That's not what I'm looking for my son. If I want him to experience those stories, I have the books, and I can go over them with him. What I want him to experience, and this is why I want to bring it away from those books and things like that, is the adventure of being a kid with your friends.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And
yeah,
it's
my favorite fucking thing about those is, oh my God, we are the 9-year-olds in the town who know what's going on, and it's up to us to save the fucking world,
yeah,
or the town or whatever. It's my favorite shit ever.
I would say though, the one thing that killed Lord of the Rings from me is, and this sounds ridiculous, but to me it changes the entire story, is when Aragorn got the sword. That ruined it a lot for me, because I'm spoiling it, but the book's been around forever, and so is the movie, so if you don't like it, well, take tough. And in the book, Aragorn got the sword, Endurl, before he started out. It was him taking the mantle of his responsibilities and him realizing what he had to do. And in the book, in the movies with Peter Jackson, he got it at the end. He went from a man...
Yeah, they fabricated the whole Elrond thing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bothered me too.
He went from a man who spent his life being a ranger and realized, I have to do this. This is my responsibility. It was my destiny, etc. I guess I'll do it. And that pissed me off because one of the things I love about fantasy is that thing of whoever going, I have a responsibility. Now, Aragorn, it was because of, it was his family. It was a family curse. And they actually call it that in the book. And so that was one of the things that really pissed me off, is like, you don't have the man accepting the mantle and doing his best to strive through it. And it, because when he got the sword in the movie, it's like, what was the point of all the fucking shit he just did? There's no driving factor for any of it. And that, to me, that really took me out. I was bitching about it when I first saw it. And that's what I meant by.
No, I think they played the reluctant hero a little bit. That he was running from the past. you know, kind of thing. They sort of tipped it in the beginning and then paid it off really with those couple of scenes.
I thought they did it. I didn't think they did that a good. I don't think they did a great job on it. But you know, I'm not particularly easy to please. So nobody's.
They just went more with the symbolism with the sword, getting it back to them. That it was like the, oh yes, I need to fulfill my destiny kind of moment.
Yeah, but I thought in the book the sword played a much more important role than it did in the movie.
Well, they were also trying to focus like crazy on Frodo and the rest of that, and really just give the military aspects of what was going on with the other characters. Yeah, and a little bit of Merry and Pippin.
Yeah, that's
story arc, but
that's
they were
true.
Trying to really hold back the Ranger Aragorn storyline, really until the very end. Like, oh, you don't know how important he is yet.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, because the first. They played fairly close to the book because in the, you know, they, in the second part in the Twin Towers is when you got to hear a little bit more of Aragorn's history, especially if you watch the extended edition, it's more present.
Right.
Versus
like
it isn't
a 3-day movie.
Oh, the fourth one, the third one is 4 hours and something.
Yeah. I own all three extended.
And I own the extended of The Hobbit too.
Mm. Yeah, me too. Even though I really didn't want to, but I'm a completionist. I'm still waiting for the 9 DVD fucking 5-foot tall, you know, statue DVD set that me and James have been looking forward to for fucking 15 years.
No, yeah, I doubt they're gonna do that.
I still think
it's like John and I waiting for the
statue of Gollum.
Well, it's like John and I waiting for them to finally release the Star Wars unedited version.
Yeah, the ultimate.
Now, I do wonder, and I wish I knew somebody young enough to answer this question, if that wanderlust is still there. Because one of the reasons I think movies and books are such a great medium for storytelling is when you're a kid, you know, you don't really have much control over your destiny. And so when you read books, you watch movies, it's that escape of you're the hero, you're fighting the Red Baron, or you're on the high seas, etc. And You have
did
yes.
Did you just make a Snoopy reference?
A little bit.
Okay.
But I mean, you have that in a book, and that was one of the reasons I loved anime, for example, was because it was a great escape from whatever. And even if it was the doldrums of everyday life and nothing bad was happening, I could turn on my favorite anime or movie. And I don't
the other fucking shitty thing is with movies specifically is back in the day. We'd all see the same movie.
Yes.
Because it was one of the two movies or three movies that was out, and it was the only one for kids, you know, for kids our age, you know, young teens or what have you. So everybody at fucking school would have been talking about that movie.
Well, we're
you know, it would have been brought up in for the next couple of weeks versus now you go to school, it's like, oh, have you seen this thing? No.
So
have you seen this thing?
So you grew up in L.A., right, Ryan?
Yeah, well, suburbs of LA.
So the question is, how many movie theaters, how many screens do you have access to? When I was a kid,
five theaters right around me.
When I was a kid, around where James and I are, there were six screens. And the two of the screens were in a theater that you never went to unless you didn't have a choice. And so when I was a kid, there were four movies you wanted to choose from when you went to the good theater that had the good screens.
Yeah, well, for the record, the three theaters that were around me all played the same three movies, you know. But my point is that back in the day when we were 9 years old and we saw the fucking first Pokemon movie, everybody at school had seen the first Pokemon movie.
I hate
versus now you couldn't even tell what show, what YouTube channel that one kid is watching versus another. It's so fragmented.
I hate
that
to
you miss that communal experience.
I hate to break it to you a little bit, Ryan. I'm the only person I knew when that movie came out that actually watched it, and I didn't see it in theaters. So there's a little bit of an age difference.
Wait, Pokemon?
Yeah.
Which one are you talking about?
The first Pokemon movie.
You're okay. What, 3 years older than me?
Yeah, Mew Returns.
Yeah,
Mew 2.
Yeah,
I
hadn't watched it until I watched it with my son.
Yeah, I don't. I believe it or not, Pokemon is a very weird, specific time period. Even like I never like I've always been in the cartoons, so I watched it because I'm a cartoon nut, but I really don't know anybody my age who really was into it besides me.
Yeah, well, I was kind of right in the pocket for Pokemon. You know, that was, you know, mid-elementary into, like, early junior high.
Yeah, I mean, so I just
how old are you, Johnny?
I'm
the same age, right? What are you guys, like, 36?
A couple of years older than that.
Yeah. You're not 37, 38.
Yes.
Which one?
Yes. I'm on the higher end of the spectrum on that, I guess.
You're 38?
Yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Really? Like, I'm just making up a fucking number. I mean, if I was going to say that, I would at least say something more ridiculous. I'm 69, you know? I was born in 1940-something.
That'd put you in your 70s, John.
Nobody's going to check me on that, so fuck off.
Anyways.
But yeah, I mean, so some of it is age, but no, I totally... I mean, but that's the old shtick. The old, was it talk radio classics when everybody talks about watching, name your TV show around the water cooler when there's so much content. But nowadays, I think what it is you're fragmented into groups a little bit more because of content. So you have your people who are really into, for me, I've always been into anime. So in cartoons, so, you know, I know people who are really into it, or at least they like it, maybe not as much as I do. You know, it was like the fellow movie nuts. I've known a select few like me who would watch almost anything. And that's, you know, and I mean almost anything. There's some movies that cross the line for me that don't cross the line for James.
And there's a lot of movies that crossed the line for everybody and didn't quite cross the line of dearly departed Jeff. You know, I mean,
God rest his soul.
Although, I just got to say, you know, I didn't really. Even his selection, like, I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it, but I'd still watch it.
There were two movies that always made him go, like, I remember that made him go, like, what the hell, was Tusk? And the Human Centipede. He actually used to get his friends to try to watch the Human Centipede because he wanted them to be as confused about it as he was. And he said, hey, you should watch it.
I tried to get a couple of people to watch
Jeff tried to get me to watch Human Centipede. And I said, so how much are you going to pay me to watch it? He's like, why? Because do you have any idea how many pictures of kittens I'm going to have to look at to get that movie out of my head? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't want to dream about that.
You know you would prefer to watch it, My Little Pony.
Make it the 80s Care Bear movie, you know.
All right, so now I'm going to bring this one up. Hold on. I got to take a step back here because you just brought up something that I want to throw at Ryan just to see where he's at on it. Ryan, are you an Invader Zim fan?
You know, I never watched a whole lot of Invader Zim, but I am a Johnny the Homicidal Maniac fan.
Yeah. So now I think you should sit down and just go through Invader Zim because I think you would love the shit out of it because it's still Johan Vasquez humor. So I think you would love it.
Yeah, by all accounts, I've known a few people who've been like, oh, man, it's sad that you missed that, you know.
Yeah, so
I only caught Johnny the Homicidal Maniac because of Brandon, you know, just a buddy that I grew up with who was a bit twisted in the head. And I was like, what are you reading one day? And he had the, you know, the compendium graphic novel and started reading. And I was like, dude, can I borrow this?
Oh, yeah.
This is insane.
Yeah, if you people out there don't know what Johnny the Homicidal Maniac is, go educate yourself.
Yeah, you need to look that shit up and Squee.
Yeah.
Definitely look up Squee.
Yeah.
And his own spinoff character.
Now, they put out a movie of Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. That's where I was, or not Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. I wish they put out a movie of that.
Invader's Inn, on Netflix, right?
Yeah. So you have to actually watch the series to understand what's going on in the beginning of the movie because it's one of those where it's niche. I mean, that's just Vasquez summed up. Anyways, it was just something I just randomly thought of. So it really has nothing to do with the topics we were on. It just popped into my head because of that. Anyways, now, so I made a joke today about 50s music at work, and there's one guy in the place where I work who's got pretty, you know, he kind of gets some of my more obscure jokes.
Bullshit, I don't believe you.
And so the joke I made was, I was sitting there and we made this joke about 90s alternative pop music is they were really depressed in the 90s. And I'm like, yes, they yes, they really are. And so I'm listening to the 50s music and I just look over at him and I said, you know, I think they were a lot more in touch with their feminine side back in the 50s and in the 90s. And it was just one of those jokes. And he goes, well, I mean, were they all committing suicide? I said, no, not really. But a bunch of them did fly their plane into the ground. And he's like, wait, what? It's like, I don't get that. I said, you know, wait a second. You don't know the day the music died? And he's like,
yeah,
wait,
shit.
What? And I'm like,
they wrote a whole fucking song about it.
Big Bopper, Richie Valens.
So I pulled
Buddy
it up.
Holly.
So I pulled it up and I showed him the, you know, they had the actual front page from the 50s on there. And I showed it to him and he's like, wait, what? You know, he's like, the Big Bopper died? And I'm like, you didn't know about this?
No, he's still living, but he lives under an assumed name.
And I'm like,
along with
you
Elvis.
Know, I'm like, how did you not know about that? So I asked somebody that's closer to my age, and she didn't really know much about it either. And I'm like, I go to work and I teach people? I'm like, I'm educating everybody.
I don't get how you don't know what that song's about.
I think a lot of people don't know what it's about. They think it's about American Pie the movie.
Anybody see the fucking La Bamba? I mean, come on. Or the Buddy Holly story with everybody's favorite
and
lunatic.
I'm like, dude.
Gary Busey, if you're wondering.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, gosh. Come on, guys. Like, so that was kind of one of those things that I'm like, I don't expect them to teach that in school, but, you know, I'm kind of like, huh. And so the other thing that I thought was interesting is, you know, I don't think I mentioned it here. Did I mention that, you know, I had to sit there and have a long conversation with four people at work about the term don't drink the Kool-Aid?
Yeah, you
yeah,
mentioned
it.
Okay,
we
did
talk about that. So it's like one of those things I'm like, what are, do people just kind of just go about their lives without even paying attention to what's happened in the past?
I think it takes a particular personality type, which apparently all three of us have. I think it helps being a little bit twisted, a little bit curious. And paying attention. Because there's a lot of references that people say that most people don't understand unless, like, they understand the genesis of it unless they pay attention to things. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but I'm just sitting there and I'm like, huh. You know, I mean, the guy I'm talking about, he's late 20s, mid to late 20s.
Yeah, so, well,
I mean, I would not really expect it from somebody below 25, but I mean,
I think, well, part of it I think is an age thing. Like if you look at our parents, some of our parents remember that, or, you know, they remember their parents talking about that. Cause my dad grew up in the 60s and 70s. Part of it's an age thing for sure. my dad definitely, cause my dad was a music nut. But I definitely think it's an age thing. Because if you ask them about, if you make a Kurt Cobain joke, they should get that because the relative of their time span.
Some of them do. I mean, if I say, you know, like the whole joke about why doesn't Kurt Cobain do press conferences anymore? You know, that joke at them. John's sitting there with him, like kind of choking on his bile. But, you know, or Kurt Cobain has been sober way longer than Whitney Houston.
Okay, move on.
Anyways, Ryan loved my response to that one.
Oh, brother.
Anyway. You know, earlier today, a friend of mine reminded me of my favorite Irish joke of all time. How many potatoes does it take to kill an Irishman? None.
John's over there shaking his head. I'm like,
talk about a predictive. That joke is so predictable. It's not even funny. Even though I bet if you said that to kids nowadays, they wouldn't get it.
It's a potato famine joke. It's fucking great.
I mean, I love it. You know, actually, I do have an Irish friend online. I'm going to throw that at him.
Along with top of the morning to you. Hilarious.
Anyways,
I think there's,
but, you know, I mean, You know, honestly, I don't think very many people would know that, though, these days.
It's an age
thing.
That's
the thing. It's a history joke. You know what I mean?
Well, for example, take Little Richard. How many people realize how important he actually was to music? Like, in what he did, he was one of the first, if I remember my history correctly, he was one of the first African-American musicians that had whites and blacks together, because he was such an amazing musician. If you look at the time period he was in, he was rocking. Yeah. And the dude's always been slightly out there.
Slightly?
But I always thought he was really important to the era. And I've heard over and over again that my opinion was right and how amazing he really was. Hmm. Or you take a look at the Muhammad Ali. In college, I got in a fairly heavy argument with a teacher on how important Muhammad Ali was during the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And his comment was, no, I did more. By the way, the teacher was an overweight white dude. And his comment was, oh, no, I did more in that time period, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no offense. There's not possible. A, you're not African-American. And two, you didn't lose everything. Like, Muhammad Ali had to go to another fucking country to do his job. Did you? So there's a lot of stuff in history that people just, I think, out of sheer laziness or time period that people don't get. Like, back in the day, you could make a joke about, man, my house looks like Fibber McGee's closet, and most people would get that reference. Nobody, unless there's somebody like me, under like 60, get that reference.
Well,
by the way, if you get that reference, shout out.
I'm just... But how much do you think people are going to go out of their way to understand things like that?
I just think it depends on the particular proclivities of the person. I've always been curious, and I've always loved history. So it depends on the person.
Well, let's just put it this way. So when I went through my surgery, you know, the two surgeons that were working the night that I ended up at the ER were known as the Hawkeye and Honeycutt of the spinal cord surgeries
hilarious. In
the nation.
That's hilarious.
Now, how many people do you think now are going to know that? And do you expect somebody in their 20s to know MASH?
That I do, because that that show has never not been in reruns one way or another.
But in the generation that we were just talking about, that's the generation that is still coming up. They are flooded with media.
Yeah, but I think that would be because of their parents, though. Like, my son will know MASH because I watch it all the time. I have the entire series on DVD. So I think it depends on what their parents watch. I don't watch a lot of new TV, so my kid's going to understand references that nobody his age will ever fucking get.
So if I just say, you know, Sergeant Schultz that, you know, I mean, he's going to understand that?
There's a good chance he will.
Brian, do you get that one?
Which one?
Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah, give me a second.
I know nothing. I see nothing.
Hogan's Heroes.
Right. Thank you. Okay.
Ding, 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 ding.
Because I keep thinking of Sergeant Schultz from... the Mel Brooks movie, To Be or Not to Be.
Yeah, there's a good one.
So I think all this depends on the parents, especially when anything was even remotely, you know, pop history, you know, TV shows, etc. I think that's just something that's inherited or just you get via osmosis. The history part, like the Jonestown stuff. I think you just have to be interested in history. I don't think most people have the time or curiosity to know about history. And I love history of all types. I've been on this spree lately of watching stuff about modern Japan and historical Japan, and it's super fascinating. But you have to be that type of person.
So you know about the Dolphin Massacre?
Not off the top of my head. I can't place it, but it sounds familiar.
Ryan, take it away.
What?
The Dolphin Massacre by the Japanese.
Oh, man. Shit. let's see. Every year, they basically pull a bunch of boats into a particular cove in this particular place in Japan. I don't remember where it is. They put a bunch of poles, like really long metal poles, into the water and start banging the shit out of the top of them. scares the crap out of the dolphins into said cove, where they surround them and start stabbing them to death with fucking, you know, spears and shit.
Well, I know they're one of the few countries that still do active whaling.
And the thing is that particular island in Japan that they do this in, they were trying to hide the fact that they were killing this many dolphins every year. And do you know how they decided to hide this?
What?
They use the dolphin meat in their school lunches.
That I did not know.
Now, the thing about dolphin meat is, do you know why you don't want to eat dolphin meat?
Why?
High mercury content.
That I did not know.
So,
makes sense.
They are feeding their children dolphin meat in high qualities or quantities
of heavy
and
metal.
It's becoming an issue with the development of the children on this island. They're becoming all autistic and slow and dying at a young age.
See, that I didn't know, but I'm more super interested in the shogunate eras.
But you want to know about the history of Japan?
Well, yes, but that just hasn't that particular history hasn't come up in the stuff I've been reading or watching.
Well, that's because they're trying to hide that.
The interesting period was the period right before the sort of imperialization of
Edo.
Japan, like right before.
Edo.
They had cut themselves off from basically anything Western-related society for about 400 years.
Listen to
and
the short
right
guy.
Right before they started going back, you know, prior to the what's referred to by the Chinese, at least, as the Rape of Nanking, and then leading, obviously, up into World War II. The period just prior to that is nutty. To me. Now, like, that was the, because it was the height of the Shogun era, but it was right before the pushback started, you know, from the emperor, who was mostly a ceremonial position.
Ryan?
Yeah?
It's called the Edo period.
Right, well, yeah, but late Edo period.
Now, the thing that that most people may not know is if you are trying to buy a samurai sword of high quality, you want to buy it from the Edo period.
Yeah, but the Edo period was very, very long time.
Yeah, but that's the period that you're discussing.
Yeah, the Shogun era, the Edo period.
Yeah, I just
but the
I just don't think
right
people,
when it ended, you know, it's late 1800s.
I just don't think people are into history as much, but maybe I could be wrong. I mean, honestly, I don't really talk to a whole lot of, I don't interact with anybody who's over 3 years old, who's a kid, because I'm hanging out with my son all the time. So I really don't know what people are into, especially people in their 20s. Cause from what I see paying attention to them, I don't know a whole lot are into history.
You know, I work with one guy, older cat, who couldn't give one shit about history whatsoever. Matter of fact, anytime I try to bring up anything historical, he always quotes the Exorcist when he's like, "Father, do you want the history on the case?" And he's like, "Why?" Like, implying to me that history has nothing to do with the modern world whatsoever, and why should anybody even know about it? And then I work with this kid, young kid, maybe about 25. He's super fucking into history. We're fucking babbling about some old-ass battle fucking just about every week.
Yeah, but he's like, well, he's one of us, you know, I,
oh, he's definitely a geek. Yeah, for sure.
And you know, so the question is how many are out there? Now, one of the best thing about the internet is so this is, how do I say this? I've always been a geek. Now being a geek is chic. When I was a kid, it was not chic, except nobody would really pick on me because I weighed more than everybody else. but so that's the part
nobody picked on me because I didn't give a shit.
Well, you, according to the stories, you were a scary little kid. I mean, that's...
I don't think so.
So, you know, I mean, I think being a geek is now, at least some degree, it's either favorable or culture has changed so much that that's just kind of the way people are.
Well, let's take a step back. Now, when you're referring to geek, that's just a cultural thing that people are trying to.
So everything
what I'm saying is they're not truly geeks, John.
Well, this is, I would say some of the stuff that back in the day that would classify me as a pretty heavy geek has become more of a cultural norm. I mean, they're not into it as much as I always have been.
Well, some of them kind of pretend is what I'm saying.
That's just, they're in the periphery versus, yes. And they're in the shallow end versus me, who's been swimming in the deep end.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of people out there who think just because they like Star Wars that they're nerds.
So or Star Trek. Well, I guess Star Trek isn't.
Or Star Trek or whatever the fuck. No, Star it's Trek more, is definitely a little more hardcore sci-fi unless you're just talking about the movies.
Well, I'm going to throw this out. They're more not into Star Trek and into Doctor Who.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool to be a Whovian.
Because you like a particular thing that's now accepted in pop culture doesn't necessarily make you a nerd.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of like actual fucking... you know, kids doing calculus in their garage still, they're like fucking posers.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I want to differentiate something. There's a huge difference between geeks and nerds, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I really do. I always thought there was a difference. And the difference is, from my personal experience, is the geeks are enthusiasts. I think being a nerd is more... I don't know how to describe
it. Well, let me just put it this way. So people out there who don't know the difference between a geek and a nerd, watch an episode or a season of Doctor Who, see how you feel, and then watch two of these movies called Revenge of the Nerds, and you will understand the difference. Because it's a big difference.
Nerds run the world.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Revenge of the Nerds, like, they really show the difference between a nerd and a geek.
Yeah, but Steve Wozniak's a nerd. Steve Jobs was a fuckhead. Bill Gates is a nerd.
Yeah.
100%. He's one of the world's most wealthiest men, or he was one of the world's most wealthiest men. He's slowly becoming a pauper.
But, you know, I mean, still, though, I mean, he's got more money than you want to even think about.
Well, but one of the guys to look at is Andrew Carnegie. He was one of the world's richest men, and he died broke. Yeah. But after a certain point, he, if I remember correctly, invested in libraries and became very altruistic later on in his life and wanted to go broke by the end of it. At least that's part of the story.
You know, that's something that people don't really go into. And I think, I don't think it was Ken Burns, but there's a documentary on all those guys, the Carnegies.
The Barons.
Yeah, that's a really interesting history. And for people out there who don't know what I'm really talking about, it's why Theodore Roosevelt came out against those guys and came up with why am I drawing a blank on that system? The monopolies. He shut down the monopolies is why Roosevelt actually went and did that. But
ask your parents about Standard Oil if they're over 60.
Yeah. That whole story is amazing to really listen to and be educated on. But that's something that I would say a geek would be interested in.
Yes.
Not a nerd.
Yeah.
A nerd would be like, that really doesn't interest me at all. They would be more interested in electrical music.
Yeah.
Really? You think EDM? So James is
one of the best ways I've heard nerds described is the way that they like something, not necessarily
there you go.
Yeah. They like
there you
they
go.
Be super obsessive, like I'm going to like this more than anybody ever liked anything.
I
know everything about it. You know, there's
but John knows what I'm talking about. He's giving me shit.
By the way, I like how James delineates a nerd as if you're into EDM. Holy shit, then everybody who's ever been to a rave is apparently a nerd.
Yeah, a druggy nerd.
Yeah, no shit. What if I'm just into Molly?
So that just makes you a drug addict.
I maybe at this point a geek and a nerd are almost interchangeable to some way, because I think Ryan's right. Is the level of enthusiasm, the almost obsessive compulsive need to research everything about it, you know, like you have to know how it happened, the mechanisms behind it, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, maybe that's something, because I'm like that to some degree, that if something fascinates me, I have to know as much about it as possible. But I've always been like that. So maybe at this point in time, the geek and the nerd are...
Interchangeable
or close to the same thing, because I do remember a point in my life when all of a sudden people started being like me and into the things that I'm into and doing some of the similar things that I do as far as my level of obsessiveness. And it's just like, when did it become an in thing? I used to get shit for some of the stuff I was into. So it always fascinated me how culture changed.
You know, the nerds took over the world. Nerds and geeks took over the world.
Hail to my people.
I still don't know why Trump is where he is.
He has money.
You know how many times that guy's been broke?
You got to be able to afford the Warhammer, you know, characters. There's got to be somebody out there who's now just swimming in Warhammer characters.
Yeah, but his money is a facade.
No, the dude's legitimately a billionaire. It's just not liquid cash.
Exactly.
Which, by the way, I mean, we're over, but look it up. If you're curious, look at the difference between solid assets and liquidity.
Yeah.
Trump does not, from everything I've heard, he's physically a billionaire, but it's a billionaire in assets, not necessarily in liquid money, which most billionaires don't have that much free cash from my personal experience, with millionaires at least. I've known a couple of them.
Anyways.
So anybody have any final thoughts?
No, we totally went on a full-on tangent this episode.
Ryan?
Negative.
What do you mean this episode? This whole show is a fucking tangent.
We really didn't change topics much.
We could have called this show This Week in Tangents or Tangentials.
Okay.
I like the name, but you could have easily called it different. Good. What was that, Ryan?
Sounds good.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the California Pariah, for the Fat Man, and for the Black Glove, as always, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.